went back looking at what are the qualities of leadership we need, particularly now during a pandemic. I went back to Thucydides and Athens, and I found Pericles' funeral oration made during a destructive pandemic that hit Athens.
Welcome to the IPA podcast. For those of you who have been listeners to the past 40 episodes of this podcast series, you know that we've been focusing on analysts who bring their clinical skills to venues outside of the consulting room, hence the name psychoanalysis on and off the couch. Given that we are all facing together a crisis of unfathomable proportions, we're going to be changing the focus of our podcast. We are going to be interviewing psychoanalysts from all corners of the globe to discuss with them how their local communities are coping with this situation, how their clinical work has been affected by this situation, and also how the internal worlds of both the analyst and the patient have been impacted by this virus, as it impacts both our real fears and our imaginary fears. We're going to encounter not only uncertainty and fear, but we're also going to learn great wisdom, gifted empathy, and hope. We'll be maintaining the title of this podcast, both as a testament to our past work and as a placeholder for our future work. I hope you find these conversations both informative and sustaining. Feel free to write comments on our webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org. Thank you.
Welcome, everyone, to today's podcast. I'm Dr. Stephen Rolfe. I'm an analyst on the faculty of the Psychoanalytic Center of Philadelphia and chair of the American Psychoanalytic Association's Committee on Corporate and Organizational Consulting. I'm managing principal of Rolfe Advisory and specialize in psychodynamic leadership advisory services for CEOs, family enterprises, leaders in crisis, and leaders with psychiatric illness. Our guest today is Dr. Michael Maccabee. Dr. Maccabee is a psychoanalyst and anthropologist who is globally recognized as an expert on leadership. He has taught or consulted to leaders of companies, government, universities, union, and NGOs in 36 countries, and has taught leadership in Oxford and Sciences Po in Paris. He directed the Kennedy School's Program on Technology, Public Policy, and Human Development from 1978 to 1990. In 2008, he received the Swedish honor of being made Commander of the Royal Order of the Polar Star for his work in Sweden. And in 2017, he received the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Washington School of Psychiatry. Among the 15 books he has authored, co-authored, or edited are The Gamesman, The New Corporate Leaders, 1976, Narcissistic Leaders, Who Succeeds and Who Fails, 2007, and most recently has edited Psychoanalytic and Historical Perspectives on the Leadership of Donald Trump, Narcissism and Marketing in an Age of Anxiety and Distrust, Routledge, 2020. Michael, welcome to the podcast. It's a pleasure to speak with you. I thought we'd begin by learning something about your psychoanalytic journey. Could you tell us a bit about how you first became interested in analysis?
I first became interested in analysis when I was a Woodrow Wilson fellow at New College, Oxford, right after graduating from college. And that year I read all of Freud's work that I could get my hands on. It was the edition, five-volume edition. The next year, I was at the University of Chicago, where I was invited to teach in the college and to study in the Human Development Department. and I took two courses from Bruno Bettelheim. And I really got into a deeper understanding of psychoanalysis. When I was a graduate student, I invited Eric Erickson to Harvard to speak in, to my students as a teaching fellow. And I thought about working with Erickson. That didn't turn out. But when I was getting my doctorate, I had worked very closely with David Riesman, who was analyzed by Eric Fromm. And Fromm was starting a large study in Mexico where he had been invited and had organized a institute, the National University, with some of the leading psychiatrists of the country. And he was starting a study of social character among villagers, among peasant farmers in Mexico. And he needed someone who understood statistics and survey research, which I did. And I got to meet Fromm, and we got along very well together.
And this would have been when,
this
Michael?
This was 1960. So he wanted me to come and work with him on the study. I said I'd do that if in return he analyzed me and I could do a study at his institute. And we agreed to do that. I got a grant from the National Institute of Mental Health for research and training. And with my wife, we drove 3,000 miles to Mexico, where I began both in analysis with Fromm, with studying at the Institute and working with him on the study, which was later published, co-authored by Fromm and me, Social Character in a Mexican Village. So then when I graduated 64 from the Institute, I stayed in Mexico for another 4 years where I practiced in Mexico City, and I became a training analyst there. But I really didn't want to spend my life in Mexico where I would never be a citizen. And I was offered actually a professorship back at Harvard to run the clinical psychology program as a full professor, but without tenure, a five-year appointment. And I turned that down because I didn't want to spend 5 years trying to please a tenure committee. And I got a fellowship at the Institute for Advanced Study in the Behavioral Sciences, started a project studying people creating new technology, which ended up the book The Gamesman, which was a bestseller. And I was invited to the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington and to work at the Washington School of Psychiatry, which I did. And I wanted to go to the Institute because they were involved in working against, lobbying against the Vietnam War, which I thought was a terrible, horrible tragedy for this country. So that's kind of the beginning of my psychoanalytic journey.
So let's go back to Eric Fromm for a second. So you were in analysis with Fromm at the time that you were working with him and involved in his project. Is that right?
I was in analysis with him for 8 years and worked on the project. I don't really recommend that, by the way.
Well, in those days, I suppose that was that much more common?
Yeah. I analyzed some of my research assistants when I was doing the project on studying the creators of technology. And I don't think that worked very well either. I, They, in retrospect, they told me they were really afraid to be totally open since they were working for me. In the case of Fromm, I had my own income, so I was not dependent on him for a salary. I had my research fellowship, and later I was practicing, and I made a good living. But still, in all, it puts a damper on being totally open.
Mm-hmm. So your work with Fromm from very early, I assume then that your interest in working with organizations really started right at the beginning, and it was natural for you to go into consulting. It wasn't a great transition to go from the clinical work to consulting.
Well, it really was. No, it was. I didn't go immediately into consulting. What happened was I had started with my work with Riesman. I was really interested in the impact of work on the psychology of workers, and I was really concerned about how much of factory work was dehumanizing. And I had done some studies of workers on assembly lines, showing how they had. You could see psychological suffering, which they had to repress to earn an income. So I had the ideal of seeing if it was possible to humanize the workplace. And I found that some people in Scandinavia, particularly in Norway, were starting experiments to transform work, quality of working life. And I found some people when I got to Washington in the Labor Department who were interested in this. I did a whole day's workshop for the American Association for the Advancement of Science in 1971, and that led to seminars with unions and management and academics on how to humanize work, and that led, long story, to a project with the auto workers and Harman Industries in Bolivar, Tennessee, which proved to give workers more say in their work, and was very successful. And Volvo in Sweden asked me to come and work with them. And then finally, AT&T and their unions asked me to work with them. And then others asked me to come and work with different companies and unions. I worked with seven different unions. So it wasn't like going immediately into consulting. I never really tried to get a job consulting. It was always people coming to me who recognized my interest in improving both productivity and the quality of working life.
And did you identify yourself as an analyst during this time?
No, I was an analyst. So, but I had developed a track record of doing projects that really effectively improve both work and productivity. What I got from analysis in these projects was really understanding people, particularly the leaders who are crucial to get these things done. And that, really that led to my studies of leadership.
You were significantly influenced by Fromm all during this work, I assume. Could you say some about that, about his impact on you and what his influence really has been?
Well, Fromm had a great influence. The sense of really focusing not only on psychopathology, but what is human development from a humanistic point of view. And looking in psychoanalytic work, I'm really not only trying to make the unconscious conscious, but supporting the most productive and loving elements in people's lives. But Fromm also his concept of social character, of understanding the relationship between personality and adaptation to a particular culture and mode of production, which was very, very useful in understanding differences in people in the workplace. I went back, Fromm wrote in his book, Man for Himself, looking at different orientation types of psychological types. And then I found he was really building on something Freud wrote about in his paper on libidinal types in 1931, showing that they were people had a combination of elements in their personality. Freud was writing there really about normal types of personality, not psychopathology. And he saw three normal types: the erotic, caring personality, the obsessive personality, hardworking, kind of focused and high level of values, and the narcissistic personality, which he saw him as himself as a type with a very little superego, a lot of aggressive energy, desire to change things, the natural leader. And people are a combination of these types. Fromm put them in a different form. I've put them again in tried to put them in a different form and focused a lot on narcissistic leadership. Which, by the way, led to an article in the Harvard Business Review that turned into a book, Narcissistic Leaders, who wins and who succeeds and who fails, which Donald Trump cited in his book, Think Like a Billionaire, as saying it described him, which led me to look more closely at his personality.
Right, which we'll get to that in a moment. But back to your 2000 article in Harvard Business Review, that was a natural evolution then to be focused on the productive aspects of narcissism. Fromm was focused on the productive aspects of personality.
Yeah, and I had
character, right?
I had worked with a few very innovative CEOs who really fit this, who were productive narcissists, who had both the strengths and weaknesses. That's what really got me thinking about it. Some of them had failures because of the negative side of their narcissism, their inability to listen to others. I remember sitting with one narcissistic leader who had asked me to help him develop his team. He had a great vision for a large healthcare organization, and he was telling his direct reports this vision, and I could see them shaking their heads. They were not convinced. I turned to him and I said to him, you're not listening to them. And he said to me, I didn't get here by listening to other people. Turned out he was fired because he didn't listen to other people. But it was true that not listening, somebody with a vision often has to not listen to others to make it happen.
So you, in that paper, talked about both aspects of narcissism, right? I mean, the destructive and the productive aspects that followed, as I said, directly from Fromm's work.
Yes, it was built on Fromm's work, but also Freud's. I know Freud first wrote about narcissism in his essay on Leonardo da Vinci, certainly a very productive person.
You talked about how you updated Fromm's idea of personality types to your own set of ideas. How do you conceptualize that, Michael?
Well, you know, as I said, Freud used erotic, obsessive, narcissistic. Fromm used the terms perceptive, hoarding, exploitative, which seemed to me a little too moralistic. I focused on the positive side of these personalities as caring,
You were saying obsessive.
Yeah, obsessive was the...
Obsessive, narcissistic, and erotic.
Yeah. The narcissistic I called visionary. The obsessive I called exacting. Now, Fromm added another type, which he saw as very modern, called it the marketing personality. This is the kind of person who has no sense of identity other than what is affirmed by significant others, who has to constantly become what is valued in the market. And I call that, the positive side of that was the adaptive personality. So, and I developed a survey test of the to get at these types, which proved reliable statistically, and I've used it over many years with different people. I taught at Oxford Business School for 14 years and gave it to all the students there, and I could see more and more people becoming marketing or adaptive, which from Fromm's point of view is understanding, because the whole mode of production, the nature of work, has been shifting from industrial bureaucratic work to much more of a in the information age, knowledge age, much more of a marketing mode of production, where people have to constantly adapt to change, adapt to different demands, what's popular, to make themselves into an attractive package. Now, I see that, by the way, in Donald Trump's personality. You know, most of mental health professionals try to diagnose Donald Trump despite the Goldwater rule. They're all saying he has a narcissistic personality disorder. If that was just the case, he would not be at all effective. Here is somebody who has had a very effective business. He's been a very effective TV performer for many years, and he got to be president. If he was the way he's described by all the mental health professionals, he would be totally unable to do any of those things. But he does have a marketing personality. He is driven to constantly seek affirmation, and his narcissism, in a sense, is more of a defense than a basic element in his personality.
So these, I assume, are the themes that you take up in your recent book, Psychoanalytic and Historical Perspectives on the Leadership of Donald Trump, Narcissism.
And marketing.
Narcissism and marketing in an age of anxiety and distrust.
You know, that title brings in more than just personality. But the fact is that it's important to understand a personality within a cultural and economic context. People may have the same kind of personality type in one culture and another, but how it comes out, how it expresses itself can be very different.
So tell me again, Fromm had a personality type that he called exploitative. What did you call that type?
Well, that was his narcissistic type.
That was his narcissistic type.
I call it the visionary. That's the positive side. And the negative side is narcissistic.
I see. So let's turn to the book for a moment. I understand the book, as you say, was in part a response to Trump citing you in his book and sort of correcting his view of himself as the productive narcissist. How did you come to write this? And tell us some more about your current thoughts on leadership.
Well, first of all, I was invited to speak about Trump and his narcissism for the annual meeting of the Association for the Advancement of Psychoanalysis. And I was, my co-speaker at that conference was Otto Kernberg. Both of us were speaking on Trump's narcissism. And although Kernberg, following the Goldwater rule, didn't want to actually talk about Trump directly, but he talked about a kind of narcissistic leader, which was obviously Trump. At the end of both of us speaking, I asked him whether he saw any contradiction between what I said and what he said. He said, none at all. Now, I was then asked by Ken Fuchsman, who was president of the International Society for Psychohistory, whether I would allow my speech to be part of a book he was putting together on Trump leadership. I said yes, and then he came back to me and said, would you be the editor? And I agreed to do that. So that's really how that came to pass. And my original talk, modified as the first chapter of the book. And then I added a couple of more chapters on how Trump's personality affects his actual policies and leadership behavior. And then finally a chapter on the kind of president we actually need.
Tell us about the president we need.
Well, I went back looking at what are the qualities of leadership we need, particularly now during a pandemic. I went back to Thucydides and Athens, I found Pericles' funeral oration made during a destructive pandemic that hit Athens. And Pericles was saying why he should be a leader. And he said, because there are four qualities that I have that a leader needs. One is to have the right policies, but two is have the ability to persuade others that these policies are the right ones. Third is truthfulness. And fourth is patriotism, putting the good of the common good ahead of your own personal interests. And I think those are very good principles. And I applied them to two of our greatest presidents, Abraham Lincoln and Franklin Delano Roosevelt, both of whom scored very well on these, while Trump scored very poorly, particularly within the pandemic we're now experiencing. And I also I've applied them to Joe Biden, who's probably going to be the Democratic candidate. And he comes out pretty well on it. Now, while Trump has a very, this marketing narcissistic personality, Joe Biden seems to have a very, very caring personality, what Freud would have called erotic and Fromm would have called receptive. The strengths are caring about others, empathy, trying to bring people together, which Biden boasts about a great deal. But the weaknesses are sometimes avoiding necessary conflict, which can be a real weakness if Biden becomes president, because he's going to have to deal. Everybody's not going to join together to make his policies happen, like both Lincoln and Roosevelt is going to have to fight for them.
Well, first he's going to have to fight to get there.
I mean, the caring personality, and also one of the negatives is they like to talk too much. The best ones, though, have to learn a certain toughness.
What's the role of aggression in this conceptualization of the marketing personality? I'm struck, obviously, Mary Trump has come out with this book, which everyone is anxious to read. But I understand that the title of one of the chapters is "The Cruelty is the Point."
Yeah. Well, in the excerpts I've seen of Mary Trump's book, I think it fills out why Trump has become marketing, why he lacks a sense of inner self-esteem and has to have it constantly affirmed or lie about it or distort in order to get others to affirm him. But the cruelty seems to come from following very much similar to his father, that his father said, "You either have to be, you're either going to be a killer or a loser. That you have to have absolutely no compassion in order to succeed." I think he has followed that too. You know, when you look at personality types, it's just a it doesn't tell you everything about a person, but it kind of gives you a lens in order to see the other elements that develop. We often underestimate the importance of a person's philosophy, of a sense of purpose, of values. These are things that change the nature even of two people with the same personality. I mean, you take two narcissistic personalities. Franklin Roosevelt and Adolf Hitler. They're both narcissists. But one has a philosophy of cruelty and destructiveness, and one has a philosophy of humanism and development.
Michael, you know, I wanted to close. Thank you for that. I wanted to close by asking you something from your vantage point as someone who, quote, applied, unquote, psychoanalysis from very early in your career and at a relatively early time. Many of us went through a lot of struggle in terms of making a transition from our clinical work to our consulting work in terms of how this was regarded by organizational psychoanalysis, if you will. It doesn't sound like that was a particular difficulty for you in any way.
No, it really wasn't. I kept learning from the people that wanted me to help them. To me, it was a great learning experience about organization and about leadership from the people that wanted me to help them understand themselves and the people they were leading. To a certain degree, it was inspiring to be able to work with leaders who really wanted to improve the quality of work life and the development of their people and their organization. I didn't consult to any organization that I didn't feel had a purpose that fit my values.
Well, Michael, thank you again. Thank you so much. We will have, you know, the references to your book as well as some of the papers that we talked about. We'll have them available on the website at ipaoffthecouch.org. Thank you again. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Well, thank you, Steve, for being interested.
Thank you for listening. If I may, I'd like to ask you to help us publicize our podcast by rating us on iTunes or simply sharing it with a friend. You can also visit our webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org, where you can both subscribe and also add your comments. I'd also like to acknowledge the lovely rendition of Beethoven's Opus 18th String Quartet by the Allegri String Quartet on the Vivat label.